Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Jumping James Herbert.
Controlling pigs.
Controlling pigs. Talking hoops. Outside talking the NBA.
Correct.
Matt Moore.
What about him?
I don't know.
He's on vacation.
He's on vacation till
Do you think
Saturday?
He's listening to us on his vacation?
No, not a chance. We can trash Now You See Me Too as much as we want.
Was Matt in Now You See Me Too?
That's the only thing that makes sense for why he would want to see that movie. That's the only thing that makes sense.
It would be pretty incredible with how busy he generally is and how often he tweets. If somehow he had snuck off to act in Now You See Me Too and never told anyone, not even us.
That may be the greatest magic trick about the entire movie. I had plans last week. I was going to see a bunch of movies. I was going to see a lot of movies.
It sounds like you didn't.
I didn't. I was going to see two a day for like three straight days because there were movies that were like basically on the end of their run that I wanted to see. One of them being The Shallows, which I've heard some pretty interesting things about. So I was like, all right, well, I can go to a morning one and then go to an afternoon one and work this around my like actual work schedule because I didn't have like a ton of shifts and everything and I didn't have a ton of features to write or whatever. Like I had this like little pocket of free time and I was going to get it all done before I went to take care of my parents' house this past weekend in Sacramento. I saw one movie.
No, what happened?
I just got lazy. It got to the point
too lazy to see a movie.
Where I was like, do I really want to leave the house right now? Like I haven't showered yet. I hadn't put on deodorant. And if I'm just going to do one movie in a day, is that really going to do anything for my plans? So, yeah, I disappointed myself. It was off of pure laziness. I'd like to
Well,
say,
everybody
like, oh,
is wondering
busy.
Right now, what is the one movie that you
I saw? The new Ghostbusters.
Did you love it?
I really enjoyed it.
Okay. I haven't seen it yet.
I give it like a
it
solid
probably doesn't
like,
shock you.
6.5, maybe 7 out of 10.
Okay. Like, that's just, not bad. That's not like great.
It's not great, but like in terms of like just a comedy, a remake, or whatever, reimagining, or whatever we want to call it. It had, like, the right amount of nostalgia. I thought the jokes were pretty funny for the most part. Like, the story was fresh enough to like, pique my interest. Like, it didn't feel like a complete copycat job or whatever. Like, it was good. Like, I just enjoyed it.
Okay. I'm glad you didn't have a horrible experience after only seeing one out of the... How many did you plan on seeing?
Six.
You wanted to see, like, six movies?
Yeah. But then I thought, like, okay... Like, I got a lot of stuff to do. I got some work to do when I'm watching my parents' house. I've got some stuff to do with, like, taking care of their dogs. There was some stuff I was going to do around the house to help them out. So I was like, all right, well, I don't have a ton of time this weekend, but maybe I'll go to a movie there. You know, one or two movies, especially as my plan had crumbled during the week. I was like, well, I could see a couple movies this weekend. And the movie theater near my parents' house is apparently closed.
No!
And then at that point, it was like, all right, do I find another movie theater? Or do I just give up? And I just gave up.
You just gave up.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lesson to everybody out there.
Right.
When your first plan is not available, just give up immediately.
Never have a second plan. you know who gave up?
Who?
The Portland Trailblazers. They gave up a lot of money to Maurice Harkless.
To Maurice Harkless? To CJ McCollum?
CJ McCollum. I forgot about that.
Max contract.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I think he deserves it. I'm a fan of his. I love his game. I love the impact he has. Like, yeah, I'd like him to be a little bit better defender and a little bigger, but he's a good combination with Damian Lillard, and the rest of the league seems to really respect the combination. So
yeah.
I'm in on it. Like, you could say, oh, max deal, he shouldn't get a max deal. Well, that's just you being hung up on the word max. All right, 4 years, $106 million. Yeah, that's a lot of money, but that's kind of the going rate now, right?
It's the going rate, and they got it without any player options or any – trade kickers or any of that stuff. Like they just got it straight done, 5 year max, or 4 year max, I guess.
Four year
right?
max, yeah.
4 year max. But it keeps him around for 5 years starting next year. And I think you just wanted to lock that backcourt up. And they didn't sign Evan Turner to replace CJ McCollum. They didn't match on Alan Crabb to have him replace CJ McCollum. Like, this was always their guy. They envisioned him and Damian Lillard playing together. I mean, that was said back from when they were drafted. But it had me thinking back to when he was drafted and how he came in I wrote a story about him back, like, I talked to people during and after his first summer league, and they were like playing him a point guard, but they were saying he was going to be a combo guard, and he was sort of going to do both, and they thought he could play with Damian Lillard, and they were similar but not really the same player, and that's sort of how it turned out. And I think he has exceeded a lot of people's expectations because of just how efficient he was when he got that bigger role and how much better he got at playing the pick and roll. And I think he got better as a ball handler, as a decision maker, as a passer and all that stuff. But he's still, like, first and foremost, he's that lethal scorer that he was when he was at Lehigh. Like, he's still that guy, and that carried over to the NBA level. And I don't think there was really any question that he was going to get a huge contract. But I don't think a lot of people expected it to get done right now. And now that it's done, like, this has been a kind of crazy summer for Portland. I mean, they haven't gotten a bunch of new additions. I mean, they brought in Azili on a pretty cheap deal.
Yeah.
But they mostly just sort of went back in on the core that got them to the second round last year. It was a weird situation. They probably shouldn't have been in the second round, but whatever. It's a young, improving team. Do you like what they've done? Like, I'm assuming you don't like the Evan Turner move because nobody likes the Evan Turner move, and we talk about it.
Right.
But aside from that, like, I think it's pretty fair what they've paid for these guys.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think that you're right. I don't like the Evan Turner move, and I probably will continue to not like it unless he finds a way to really fit into what they want to do. But
yeah.
And I think I said this after maybe Matt and I talked about this, or maybe you and I talked about this at one point. But like, the idea to have him with the ball in his hands when those two are on the floor is dumb to me. Like,
Sam.
Neil O'Shea is a smarter man than I am. Terry Stotts is a smarter man than I am, especially when it comes to basketball. But, like, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I get the idea of they don't have to create as much for themselves, so maybe that, like, boosts some shooting efficiency or whatever. But if you take the ball out of their hands and give it to Evan Turner, the defense is just going to say, okay, well, let's deny these guys now, and Evan, go ahead and do what you do. Right? Like,
yeah.
That's it. Now, if you move him more into, like, a second unit role, that makes way more sense to me, especially they don't really have a backup point guard. Like, they have Shabazz Napier, who's not any good.
I mean, CJ was really the backup point guard.
Right, exactly. But there is, I mean, you can stagger things, but you still need enough depth. And, like, if a guy goes down, then you really need that depth, right?
Yeah,
and they don't have that right now. But I guess you could run Evan as, like, a point wing.
I mean, that's what the Celtics did.
Yeah.
So, like, that makes sense.
I guess
so. But I think the plan is to start him, though.
Right. Like,
that's the weird thing.
I'm not saying, but I don't think that's a good idea. Yeah. I just think it's a better idea than playing him with Lillard and McCollum extended minutes.
Yeah.
But the rest of the team, like, you know, Aminu's turned out to be a steal.
Absolutely.
I think Plumlee's, like, pretty good.
Me too.
I don't know if that's a hot take, but I feel like Plumlee's pretty good. And I like what I saw out of him in the playoffs as they made him almost that, like, Draymond Green-esque pick and roll playmaker. You know, at times it looked pretty bad, and at times it looked pretty effective. And I think that he can grow in to that role, doing more of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ed Davis was solid. Myers Leonard, if he's healthy, is solid. I don't like what I saw out of Noah Vonleh, but now they have Festus Ezeli, who I think will play much better than he did in the playoffs. I like keeping Allen Crabbe. I'm not a huge Mo Harkless guy because he doesn't shoot threes well at all. But if he can, you know, even get close to league average on that, I like his effectiveness a lot more. I mean, this team is good. Like, I think they played over their heads last year, but I think I don't expect them to be complacent. And I think that's the problem, is like when a team plays over their head, like let's say the Suns in 2014, right? 2013, 2014. Suns play over their heads when they're supposed to, you know, be tanking. They win 48 games. They come back the next year. They do the weird Isaiah Thomas edition.
That was so weird. The
it
day
was
it happened.
Really
like,
weird.
That was not just in retrospect. Like, I remember writing about it that day and being like, wow, this is great value for Isaiah Thomas, but what the hell are they doing?
Right, exactly. And and I think that they got a little complacent. Like, there's some injuries, there's some fit problems, but I think they got a little complacent and came crashing back down to earth. I don't expect that with the Blazers. I think the Blazers learned from that series against the Clippers. You could say they got lucky because of the injuries. Sure, but they played, they finished it the way they were supposed to finish it. They fought against the Warriors to the point where the Warriors were gushing about them.
They competed like crazy in
that series. Like, it was a very competitive 5-game series, right? And I think that they'll learn from that. I don't think the organization is complacent, and I think that they'll have the right leadership to learn from that and to really build off this. So I like where they're going. I still don't like the Turner deal. I think the money for Harkless is about right. Like, all right, you're paying him what Iman Shumpert gets. Yeah, yeah. That makes sense to me. Like, you know,
And to me, what he showed, and I know the three-point shot, like, that is the concern with him. And to his credit, I mean, I did an interview with him, like, a month ago, and he knows. Like, he was saying he's going to work on his three-point shot all summer. He said he's going to work on other stuff, too. He wanted to be able to, like, post up smaller guys and do stuff like that. But I think if you look at his physical profile and some of the stuff he did toward the end of the regular season when he was starting at the four, and he started at the four in the playoffs in both of those series, but was like guarding point guards and shooting guards and all that. Like, those are guys that like every team wants, who can be that versatile defensively. And he's a pretty good rebounder, for his size. And his thing is just, he's got to make that three consistently. And I think that whole organization knows that. That was a big thing with Aminu too, and I thought he shot it pretty well. He had some big games, and even in the playoffs, hitting open threes, that guys continued to let him have. And I think you can sort of get those guys that don't have the proven shot at a little bit of a discount, because I think if he's a consistent 3-and-D guy at his size, then he's making like $15-16 million a year.
Yeah, and for sure. Yeah, I completely agree with that.
And since he doesn't have that, they got him for 10, and the hope is that over the next few years, he'll get that in his game. And I think there's a good possibility that he will. So I thought that was fair. I thought the Myers-Leonard deal, he got like $41 million, like for a stretch five that can legitimately hit threes. That's pretty good. I'm sure there will be people who look at them and say, you know, Can this team realistically compete for a title? No. So why did you give all this money to these guys? Well, I think when you had the momentum that they did as a franchise, they didn't want to take a step back. They invested in pretty much young guys all over the roster. Like, you can still get better. So I think it makes sense. The Turner thing is the one thing that everybody will say they overpaid, and I definitely don't disagree with that. But overall, I mean, this still looks like one of the more exciting teams to watch next year, and I think they can be better than they were last year.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that your point about Harkless, I think it extends to Alan Crabb too. Like, I don't think Alan Crabb is worth the money he got right now, but I think he has a very high likelihood of growing into that contract, right?
Yeah.
And maybe even exceeding it. And that's what I kind of see with the Harkless thing too, is that I probably wouldn't pay him $10 million a year right now based on how good he is. But I think he can make that contract look like a steal in 2 years.
Yeah,
I really do.
He's still so young.
Yeah, exactly. And he hasn't had that much experience. He didn't have that much experience with Orlando, I didn't feel like, and I don't really think that was a good situation anyway. I think that, this team doesn't look like a team that can compete for a title, in my mind.
Yeah.
This year, or even in like the next like 2 or 3 years, but they are such a young core together that I don't know. Like, maybe they either find a way to grow those players into those roles to where they get to a point where they can, you know, 5 years from now or whatever, whatever random time frame you want to put on it, they're competing for a championship. Or maybe they develop those guys, are able to move them for that missing piece that brings them up into it. Like, I think their options – this was a thing – Matt and I argued about this with the Jazz years ago when they kind of let – I think they didn't trade Jefferson, they didn't trade Millsap at the deadline, and then those guys ended up walking in free agency.
Yeah.
And he thought that was horrible, and it might have been horrible, even though they've kind of rebounded from that pretty well. Like, it might have been a bad decision at the time. I liked it because I thought that not moving them at the deadline still gave them options going into the offseason to kind of just recalibrate and go many different directions that all could be positive. And I think that that's, in a way, like, Portland has done that in a much different way with these signings and everything. It's like you've given them, you know, maybe a little bit too much money now, but they can easily grow and exceed those contracts, and you have options down the road either to grow this core or to move them after you've grown them a little bit more for a better player. And so I'm a huge fan of teams giving themselves options, and I think they've done that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to put it, because I think if you look at, like, part of what you just said was they might end up having guys that they end up moving, and maybe they get that missing piece in a trade. They're not going to have money to get that missing piece in free agency, and that whether or not they signed Mo Harkless for $40 million, whether or not they gave Myers Leonard his $41 million, like, they wouldn't have been able to get a big fish in free agency in the next couple of years regardless, right?
Right.
So you keep these guys, and then if there is some big trade target that you want to have, then you can get them without totally gutting your team, because now you have depth. Like, now they can trade some of these guys, and they're not suddenly like, oh, we don't have anybody on the wing who can play, or we don't have any centers who can play. I mean, they have a little bit of a glut now in the front court with all those bodies when they added Azili to a rotation that was already pretty solid. But I think that's kind of a good problem to have. And I think the minutes crunch that you might see on the wing now with Harkless, who's a 3-4, and Crabbe, who's a 2-3, and then CJ playing the 2 a lot and all of this, I don't think that's necessarily a problem. Like, Terry Stotts will have to sort out who plays and how that rotation will look. But I think they're in a pretty good position, and I think that there are things you can debate. Like, you can say, well, maybe at that money they should have just let Crabbe walk over to Brooklyn for his $75 to $83 million contract. But I think it's good to keep him in the system that they've built there. That's a guy that they drafted and developed, and they didn't want to lose him for nothing. They didn't want to let Harkless go, especially when no team ended up giving him that huge offer sheet like what Crabbe got. So I'm optimistic about them, even though I understand, like, the big picture concerns that people would have about them not being a top tier team. But not, look, like, not every team can be a top tier team. And when you're looking at what the Warriors and Cavs are, I mean, it's just not realistic to think for 90% of the NBA that you're going to assemble a team that can compete with those ones next year.
Yeah, and I've always wondered this about Lillard, of, like, as we are in the Steph Curry era, right? And
yeah.
And I know some people are freaked out about that because they just lost the finals. But let's just get over that for a little bit and just say, like, all right, we're in the Steph Curry era. He was back-to-back MVP. He's still pretty good, right? He's still I don't think he sucks now. So we're going to eventually be wondering, like, hey, is somebody the next Steph Curry? Like, we went through that a tiny bit with Buddy Hield because of the story coming out of college, right? But, like, at some point we're going to look for, can anyone get to that kind of a score with those kind of shots and everything? And I've always wanted to write about this, but I can't really figure out how, of, like, is it possible for Damian Lillard to be the next Steph Curry?
Well, he doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't love comparisons.
No, he hates comparisons. Right. So that would be a great thing to ask him about. But, you know, like, I mean that in a way of, like, could he be the guy that is just crazy lethal from 25 to 35 feet?
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, he already is.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's surprising how bad his shooting is in terms of just percentages. But I think I think he can, one, raise those. Not have it be that hard of a process. And two, I think that he's always going to be that threat, whether he's like a 45% three-point shooter or just like a 38% three-point shooter, right? Like, I think that and what I mean by, like, could he be the next Steph Curry, I mean that in a way of, like, could he bend the defense in a way that only Steph Curry seems to be able to do?
Yeah,
I don't know the answer to that, and I've tried to figure it out, and I don't really know what to think, but I do think, like, if we're looking for a next guy, he seems to fit the profile at least better than anyone we've seen so far.
Well, I think he does for a few reasons, and one is just simply his range. I mean, there aren't a lot of guys who take those deep threes off the dribble like Steph Curry does, but Lillard is one of the few that will do that, and he'll do that in big situations. He'll just come off the pick and roll and shoot before anybody can get to it, and his percentages aren't as good as Steph's because no one's are, but he has the confidence to take that, and his teammates have the trust in him to do that. And I think part of it also with him is just how calm he is all the time. It's sort of Steph-like because he's, like, unshakable, and he's been praised for his leadership, like, especially last year. But I think even when he came in as a rookie, he was one of those guys that would take those deep shots, would not be afraid of it, and would do it at any point in the game. And I think that's sort of where the comparison is with me, even though Dame doesn't like it. I think we can both be pretty clear that it's a compliment to be comparing him to the back-to-back MVP.
I don't know. He's a loser now after losing up 3-1 in the finals.
Uh-huh. So I'm not sure if the percentages ever get there because it's just something we've never seen.
Right, like, that's an insane thing to lump on somebody. But
yeah, but I mean, I do think even now, like, teams do have to play Damian Lillard differently than they play other guys because most point guards, most shooters just don't even think about taking those shots, but he actually will, and he does. And I think as his career goes on, he's only going to get more confident in that instead of getting, like, more conservative about it.
Right. So I just looked it up, just attempts from 28 to 35 feet.
Yeah.
One, Steph was 45 of 87, 51%, which is
yeah, sure.
Like, that's just dumb. That's really one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in terms of stats. Two, Damian Lillard was second in attempts at 50, but he was only 15 of 50, so 30%. So obviously, yeah, there's some work to do.
He takes them with confidence and like.
Right. But yeah, you know. I mean, he had the second most makes in the league. He had the second most attempts. No one else even attempted more than 29.
Yeah.
Kobe was obviously third at 29 attempts.
How many did he make of them?
Seven. So that's 24%. Okay. So not much better or not much worse than Lillard, but whatever. Like, I do think that, I don't know, I think there is that kind of ability to stretch the defense in that way. And even if he only be, even if he like he only got to like being like 60% of the threat that Curry is out there, well, no one else is even like half that, right?
So yeah, that's there's no one.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, I think it's an interesting thought process to be like, could he get to the point where he's bending the defense in that way and being, you know, hyper effective?
I do think, like, if there was a 4-point line, there wouldn't be that many people who would automatically start taking them like immediately.
Right.
But I think even if Lillard was given like 3 hours notice, like, okay, tonight there's going to be a 4-point line, he'd be ready. He'd be fine with it. He just lost them.
I like a lot of what this Blazers team has done. They've been, and they were a fun story last year, especially like, what was it? It was like mid-January they got going.
Like, yeah, they went on a winning streak.
Yeah, there was something like 9 games under 500 in mid-January, somewhere along those lines, and they were just a
lot of
fun.
They got to a soft spot in their schedule, and their defense got a lot better.
Yeah, their defense got better, and that's kind of like what you would hope for them. Like, obviously, you would hope that, hey, they could be the 5 seed. Like, that's a cool thing, right? And make the second round. But realistically, I think you went into last season thinking, this team could be a real pain in the ass in the second half of the season. And they were. They just managed to turn that into like being very profitable at the same time in terms of wins and in terms of, you know, being able to get halfway into the postseason.
Yeah. I mean, I think people looked at the roster and thought, how are they going to score aside from Dame?
And I honestly, I didn't think they'd, like, I thought they would be horrendous defensively. Like, truly horrendous. Yeah. And credit the coaching staff.
And they weren't great, but...
No, they weren't great, but they were much better than I thought they would be, especially the second half of the season.
Yeah.
And you can say, yeah, it was a soft spot in the schedule. Yeah, it was, but everyone has soft spots in the schedule at some point. Yeah. Like, you have to take advantage of it, and they did.
Yeah. And that honestly, I think... And it's weird, because historically he wasn't known as a great defender, but I do think part of that Turner move was they wanted another guy who can guard three positions. Like, they wanted another defender, and I thought he did play pretty good defense in Boston. And no, he's not like a shutdown defender. It's not like they went and got Avery Bradley or Jimmy Butler or whatever. But I do think, as much as, you know, the Blazers will talk about his ball handling and wanting another creator, I think a lot of the reason why they signed Turner was they just wanted another guy who was, you know, like about 6'7" and can get his hands in some passing lanes and can bother people on defense.
Yeah, and he's like a solid physical defender, right? Like, like, you can't really turn your shoulder on him and get an advantage. Like, he's a big guy for his position. He's strong. He moves his hips pretty well. Like, he's a very solid defender in that respect.
Yeah, and I thought they played really great team defense in Boston, and I thought he fit into that really well.
This is going to be tough for me, man, because I really enjoyed watching that Blazers team, and I really don't enjoy watching Evan Turner play basketball.
Yeah, you're going to have to...
That's conflicting.
You're going to have to figure this out.
CJ and Dame just have to be amazing.
I think you should just fully embrace the Evan Turner experience, if you ask me. Like, he gives great quotes.
What an awful idea.
No, I think you should just surrender yourself to the year of Evan Turner. And if it goes horribly...
Of Evan Turner?
Yeah.
Not even just like, oh, maybe you should just try to enjoy it, but we're going to dedicate the year to him.
Yes, I'm saying just buy in.
Oh my God.
Right? Give him a year. If it goes horribly, then you can just swear off the Blazers,
James,
and say you don't care about
them. I'm already old. I can't dedicate a whole year to Evan Turner and hope that it turns out to be a positive experience.
You're not that old.
I'm in my mid-30s, James. I can't do this. 10 years ago, sure.
You're in your mid-30s as a writer. You're not, like, nearing retirement. You're not an NBA player.
James, I'm basically dead. I don't have much more time on this planet. What else should we talk about? Speaking of things that come to an end, Amari Stoudemire retired as a Knick.
That came out of nowhere.
As a member of the New York Knicks. Signed a one-day contract.
Yeah, I mean... So stunned by this.
Not that he retired.
I mean, I'm stunned that he retired today. Like, sure. There weren't really any rumblings about it. I mean, I get it. He hasn't been healthy for a long time. But that he did it as a Knick? That he signed a one-day contract with the Knicks? Like, I understand he's really proud of, like, when he went there and had that one great year and how, you know, he wanted to be the guy. And he was very much like, look, I'm the one who chose to sign with them when they were terrible. And, like, they've gotten to a somewhat better place now. But, like, his best years were so clearly in Phoenix. Like, that is the Amari Stoudemire that I want to remember.
Here's the
Phoenix Suns version of Amari Stoudemire, not the New York Knicks one, which, you know, that era started off very promising and then like, just devolved.
Yeah, for, like, 3 months. Like, two and a half months, it was really exciting. And then it got weird after the whole Carmelo thing.
Yeah.
So I looked up just, like, basic, like, pick-and-roll effectiveness from 2004 on to present day. In 2004-2005, this is his first season with Steve Nash.
Yeah.
He put up 1.418 points per 100 or points per possession.
Yeah.
So to get that into better terms, like the Warriors scored what? Like 114 points a game or something, or 114 points per 100 possessions this year.
Yeah.
112, something like that. So if you had had an offense of just Amari Stoudemire finishing in pick and rolls in 2004-2005, he would have scored something like 27 points more per 100 possessions than the Golden State Warriors did. Like, that's how effective he was. Like, 141.8 points per 100 possessions as a pick and roll man, and shot 70% from the field. In that time, since 2004, it has happened. Like, someone has cracked the 1.4 points per possession threshold. And we're talking, like, with enough attempts to be a reasonable, you know, threat. Three times. We've had it three times where that's cracked. Twice was by Amari. He did it again in 2007-2008.
Did, like, Brandon Wright do it or something? Like, I'm thinking
he didn't have enough possessions for this for this particular thing. But, you know, he has had some insane, like, small sample size efficiency. And the other person was DeAndre Jordan this past season cracked 1.4.
Right. And that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense because that's all they do with him, and he jumps higher than everybody. But but that's the thing. Like, Amari, like, yes, he's had Steve Nash, but to be one of just, like, he's not the only player to ever have a really good point guard who can pass, right? And and that just shows you, like, the weapon he was. And he was more than that. Like, he could post up, he could face up, he could take you off the dribble. Like, he was just an unbelievable weapon on offense. I was never a huge Amari fan, because I didn't like, you know, the subpar, or I guess, like, not subpar, subpar's harsh, but, like, I didn't like the rebounding numbers, and I didn't like I definitely didn't like his defense and everything. But if you just look at him and just appreciate what he could do, like, he was a monster.
He was incredible. And those Suns teams will always be some of my favorite teams ever. And that was, you know, it was Amari. It was Sean Marion playing the four and being insane. And obviously everybody's, no, I shouldn't say everybody's, but a lot of people's favorite player on the planet at that time was Steve Nash. And he made it all work so brilliantly. But there hasn't really been a pick and roll finisher like him. I mean, DeAndre's a good comparison because they both finish in a similar way. I mean, they can catch it and still be like a couple of feet outside of that dotted line and just rise up and dunk on people. And it's like terrifying because they're just that athletic. But Amari had really nice touch, and he could take contact. He could finish around the rim, even if it wasn't a dunk. And after his first year, really, he started working on that mid-range jumper. And once he had that, and you couldn't just play off of him and hope that he shot, then there was really no way to stop that pick and roll with Steve Nash and him. Like, it was impossible. And he was never, like, an awesome passer that you'd want to, like, play through. But he definitely knew how, if help came, like, he could make that pass to the corner, to the shooter, to a guy on the wing. Like, that team just, everybody knew where everybody was supposed to be, and he was such a huge part of that. And it's been weird watching him the last few years because he's still, like, a pretty good pick-and-roll player, and he still really wanted the ball to post up, and he always kept saying in the media how he wanted to be dominant again and all that. But it wasn't the same, and I just, if you were a younger listener who missed Amari's prime, like, just watch the highlights. Cause, like, he's not the guy that we saw with the Heat, and, like, he's just not, like,
yeah, he put up. So from, like, 2005 to 2010, he put up 23 points a game on 56% from the field. That's crazy.
No, it just felt like it was automatic.
Yeah, and he was like a 70. He was about a 78% free throw shooter, so you couldn't just put him at the line or anything. Like he was just like just this hammer that brought down on everyone. Yeah. Like he had the dunk on, he dunked on Yao. He dunked on a little Candy. Yeah, that just brutal dunk on Anthony Tolliver.
Yeah, I mean, I watched that one a couple of times today.
There are a couple of great things. So there's the thing where he tells people, like, what were you thinking? He was thinking, I hope he jumps.
Yeah.
Which is just a great quote. And then there's a clip where Jason Richardson talks to, like, the Phoenix broadcast after the game. And the first thing he does is he comes and talks to, you know, sits down with them. He's like, you got to show me the replay of that dunk. And then he's, like, laughing throughout the replay and stuff. Like, that's, like, he really did just... he galvanized teammates, like he galvanized the league. Like everyone wanted to see Amari Stoudemire highlights as much as anybody else during that time.
He did. He loved dunking on people.
He loved dunking on people.
Yeah.
As much as, you know, as much as Steph Curry likes taking threes, he loved dunking on people.
Yeah, I mean, he was incredible, and his prime ended up being way shorter than anybody thought because, you know, it's like. And these guys come out of high school, like they immediately win Rookie of the Year. He becomes an all-star really quickly. And you just think this guy's going to be so good for so long. And now he's retiring. Like, how old is he?
He's 34? He'll be 34 in November.
Yeah, I mean, he's retiring at 33 years old. Like, that's really young.
I'm older than him. Holy crap.
Yeah. And it's just a shame because... I think, you know, he might still make it in the Hall of Fame, but it's kind of borderline now, right? Because his prime is so short. And I think earlier on in his career, you would have thought, like, absolutely,
yeah,
he would be a Hall of Fame player. Because when he was at the top of his game, there really were few people like him.
Yeah, that's maybe a good line to draw of, like, if you're better than Amari Stoudemire was in his career, then you're definitely in the Hall of Fame, right?
If you're like significantly better, yeah.
I wouldn't even say significantly better. Yeah. And I actually think he has a great chance of making it. But I always try to figure out what players are that line.
Yeah.
Of like, if you're better than this guy, then yes, you should be in. If not, then no, you shouldn't. Like, I always kind of felt like Chauncey Billups was that guy for guards, where yeah. I'm not even convinced that Chauncey Billups should be in the Hall of Fame, even though he has the Finals MVP.
He'll make it.
I think he will, but it's like a matter of like, do I think he should be like, do I think the Hall of Fame should have Chauncey Billups in if yeah. we're going to make it like this prestigious thing? Now, granted, like a lot has happened with the Basketball Hall of Fame where I don't know that anything is actually all that measurable anymore.
Right.
And so that's kind of an issue, but like, I think Amari is kind of that power forward version of me or that big man version of the Chauncey Billups. So like, I think if he's the line of whether or not you should get in. If you're below him, you definitely should not.
Yeah.
And if you're above him, like, yeah, I think he makes a great case. I think Chauncey makes a good case. I think I would put Amari in. I guess mm-hmm. I would put Chauncey in, but I don't really know.
I'm not sure if you looked at the numbers that Chauncey would necessarily stack up to some of the other great point guards, but
he led his team to six straight, seven straight conference finals. Like that should matter.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I don't know. Like was half of his career good enough?
Is that
even a proper way of looking at it? Like I don't know. Like it's kind of complicated, right?
Yeah, I mean he's one of the guys. Like it's sort of like Kyle Lowry now. It's like he sort of. Went to a bunch of different teams. He was traded in the middle of his rookie year.
Yeah.
And then sort of out of nowhere, he became like this guy who was all-star caliber and then was leading a title team. But it didn't always look like that was the way his career was going to go.
Right.
And yeah, so when you say was half of his career good enough, like I know exactly what you're getting at.
Yeah. And for Amari, I don't know, does that fit in as well? Like his like other than that 1 year with the Knicks, has a pretty bad last five years, but he also was just battling horrible injuries. Like if he had been healthy during this time, that's another tricky thing too. Is like if he had been healthy, I don't think anyone like quibbles with whether or not he's a Hall of Famer.
No, absolutely
like
not.
Like but that should factor in somewhat. I don't think you can use like Bill Walton as the example because he was just an unreal stratosphere of player. But I don't know.
Right.
Like, there is kind of that question of like. Should we hold it against a guy completely because he didn't have the longevity, not because he wasn't good enough during that time, but because he wasn't healthy enough.
Yeah, like, what if he had just retired 3 years ago and your most recent memories weren't, like, the past few years?
Right,
when he
exactly.
was, like, a liability on defense and still wanted the ball a lot and all of that. Like, I don't know. Like, I do think, though, like, for sure that because of the way he declined, a lot of people don't remember just how great he was, and it's worth, like, when you're looking at this kind of thing, and whether it's a Hall of Fame or just how a player is going to be remembered, what his legacy is, like, I think you have to remember at one point he was, what, one of the, like, top 5 or 10 players in the league? Like, he was probably the most efficient player in the league.
Yeah.
He was amazing. No, and he really I think was. That counts for something. And I think he'll probably, like, probably what hurts him a little is that, sort of like Marion, like, this has all been documented, like, in 7 seconds or less, and other people who have talked about those Phoenix Suns team is like, those teams is like, he always wanted to be a bigger star. He always cared about that kind of thing. He wasn't like 100,000% like, I'm just all about winning. Like, no, like, he like Sean Marion, I think, thought, like, yeah, I'll kind of sacrifice for the team, but also I want to be known as one of the best players in the NBA. And you can quibble with, like, why didn't he develop more as a defensive player? Why, like, I think he was quoted as saying he didn't work on defense for his first, like, 4 years in the NBA.
Right.
And maybe it was even longer than that. I don't remember when that quote came out. But I think you can pick and choose things where if you wanted to be like, yeah, he could have been better, or he could have been this or that. But I do think at the top of his game, he was really something special.
Yeah, here's something. I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if this is a good way to measure it, but I just looked it up. There are 14 guys in NBA history who have scored more than 15,000 points in fewer than 900 games that are in the Hall of Fame. So you're looking at Larry Bird, Bob Pettit, Walt Frazier, Paul Arizin, Julius Erving, Elgin Baylor, Rick Barry, Sam Jones, Bob McAdoo, George Gervin, Tiny Archibald, Bernard King, Jack Twyman, Pete Maravich. You know, maybe he fits into that, like, kind of Bernard King-esque Hall of Fame type of induction, right? And there aren't that many guys who have put up that scoring in that few games who are not in the Hall of Fame. Like, you're in terms of guys who are done, you're looking at Weber, Tim Hardaway, Marbury, Higgy Vandeweghe.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's kind of it in terms of guys who, like, maybe were on the cusp. So, yeah, maybe he does deserve to get in despite the injuries and all that stuff.
So, just like Bernard King, Amari Stoudemire is synonymous with the Knicks and a Hall of Famer.
Exactly. That's what we'll remember him for the most. Hall of Fame, Nick.
As beloved in New York as Bernard King.
Exactly. Sure. 100%. James, you know what I love?
What do you love?
My country.
Mm-hmm.
And Team USA basketball.
That was just the smoothest segue imaginable.
You know what I don't love is I'm based on just like our work schedules and stuff. I'm getting stuck with all these recaps of Team USA exhibitions, and I don't know what to write that's even remotely interesting for them.
You're gonna have to get really creative.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta figure something. So I wrote about the exhibition win over Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote about the exhibition win over China. They face China again tonight, this time in Oakland. So I guess that's exciting because Kevin Durant gets to play as a member of the home team at Oracle Arena.
Yeah, I mean, that's an easy story for you.
Sure, I guess so. Like, there's one takeaway. I just need four more. I don't know.
What if you wrote the entire recap in the voice of a disgruntled Thunder fan?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Mandarin.
I mean, that's... I'm not looking to challenge you that much.
Yeah, that's... Oh, man.
But I'm saying if you just start with, like,
somebody
stupid traitor Kevin
Mandarin.
Durant
somebody
played in
Mandarin.
Front of his dumb Oakland fan
wow.
for the first time.
Wow.
Like,
just break out the lava pen for the hot take.
Yeah.
Someone taught me some Mandarin in Vegas, and now I can't remember it. Well, I guess they didn't teach it to me then.
So you're saying it stayed in Vegas?
It did. It wasn't much, but it was a couple of things. Man, now I feel really dumb.
I'm sorry.
But I don't know. Like, all right, so did you watch these games at all?
Yeah. But, I mean, okay, I watched them. I did not pay attention to every single possession because these are exhibition games.
I got to be honest. Neither did I.
Yeah, like, I mean, the guys seem to be having a lot of fun, like, is my main takeaway. Like,
yeah, like, they're, it's fun watching Kevin Durant play basketball, right? Like, yeah. There's a takeaway.
Also, I sort of forget because it's been so, like, I mean, you watch them every 2 years, but you kind of feel like, oh, right, like, in this situation, because they're playing, like, limited minutes and because of who their teammates are, like, they just play such aggressive defense because they can. Like, right. Nobody has a big load offensively. So you see, like, Kyrie pressuring at, like, half court. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay. And everybody's, like, trying to get around the top of screens, and the big guys are, like, up pressuring really high. And
DeMarcus Cousins, just... I legitimately felt bad for Argentina against DeMarcus Cousins.
How much weight has he lost?
I don't know. He looks great. This hot yoga thing is working. And he...
I mean,
and he was
hot
just...
yoga sounds like a deeply unpleasant activity, so...
it.
I'm not like,
sucks.
Oh, it's... I'm going to do this now because of DeMarcus Cousins.
Right.
But this is the sort of thing that people would watch him and say, oh, I better do some hot yoga now because of how good he looks.
I did it for a little while in Minneapolis to the point that I had like a membership to a place.
Oh, wow.
But
here I am thinking I knew everything about you.
It sucked, though. Like, it really sucked. Like, it's a great workout. And you do feel amazing, but it's really hard. It's really hard. And I would imagine when you're like 275 pounds, it's even harder.
I would think so. But it's working, and he looks pretty mobile. And he's always such a beast in international. Not that he isn't in the NBA,
yeah.
But like these teams don't have anybody who like knows what to do with them.
Right. When you're not able to throw like two guys at him while also shading a third guy over.
Yeah.
It's pretty unstoppable.
Yeah, exactly.
DeAndre Jordan airballed a free throw at Staples Center.
Yeah, and everybody loved it.
Everyone loved it. DeMarcus was clowning him. I think yeah. Durant and Melo were clowning him too.
Yeah.
So that was great. It's fun watching Melo in international play, even though I don't think he's really shot that well.
No, but he's just a kind of different player in international
yeah.
play.
I really think Klay got screwed up by the closer 3-point line in the first game. I legitimately do.
Like too close for him.
He figured it out in the second game, but I think the first game had really screwed him up, and he'd had to like take a couple steps back.
Yeah, it's like, why is this so easy? Yeah. No, this is messing with me. Yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah, but and even like Harrison Barnes can't screw it up. Like they found
Harrison Barnes had a huge dunk in that last game.
He did. He looked like the ankle was healthy, which is
yeah.
good. Yeah, he had that big dunk.
Did we ever talk about the Harrison Barnes Team USA thing? Like just him being on the team.
Well, I just like I think it's different because so many guys declined.
I just never had a problem with it because A, he's played with some of these guys before.
Right.
B, he's shown he like knows how to be like really good like fourth or fifth option on a really successful team. And also like you want guys who are going to be okay with not playing that much.
Right.
Like they've had that on every team. Like Christian Laettner was that guy. Like,
right.
There's a limited Tayshaun amount Prince, of minutes you have available.
Yeah, Tayshaun Prince, Carlos Boozer, Michael
right?
Redd, I believe were all on the 2018.
Yeah. Even no. like in, like 2 years ago at the World Championships, like there were some games where DeMar DeRozan didn't really play.
Right.
And like, I never had a problem with it. You're asking like a 3-and-D role player to be a 3-and-D role player and be versatile and play some power forward, which he's done. With the Warriors, like to me, it just made a lot of sense. I get that they could have gone with like an all-star or whatever. They were probably bigger names, arguably better players. But I thought it made sense. And I know some people were mad about it because he was coming off those three horrible games in the finals. But I mean, he's also sort of, I mean, these are meaningless exhibition games, but it's like, oh yeah, Harrison Barnes is actually a good basketball player. Maybe not a great one, but like he's a good player.
Yeah, he's I would say he's one of the 500 best players in the world.
I feel pretty
confident saying that.
That's a little conservative, but yeah, sure.
He's a definite NBA player.
Uh-huh.
I feel comfortable with that hot take. Yeah, and on.
But is he a max contract player, Zach? Tell me.
Did someone give him a max contract?
Yes.
Then yes, he is.
There you go. That's the definition.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm not a $10 million writer. If someone gives me $10 million to write, I'm a $10 million writer. Like, that's just how it works.
Yep.
You may not like it. I don't know. Get better at timing your contract being up. That's
yep.
what I would say. And I don't know. That kind of brings up a decent comparison of, like, could Harrison Barnes now be DeMar DeRozan of a couple of years ago? Is that a fair,
I mean, maybe.
In terms of, like, overall play, and could he get to the – like, is it crazy to think Harrison Barnes can become a DeMar DeRozan-level player? That means, like, what? Like, a pretty solid all-star, maybe an all-NBA-type guy? Like, could he do that under Rick Carlisle in Dallas? Like, I don't – I would say probably not, but I don't think – like, if you think that that's possible, I don't think that's crazy.
No, I don't think that's crazy at all. I mean, he's still young, and I think in some areas he's better. Like, I mean, he's a bigger guy. He's a more versatile defender. He can play the power forward position.
Right.
The question is, like, how is he going to evolve as a playmaker? Because he's never had to do that for, like, extended stretches in the NBA. And when he did a little more, it was sort of like, all right, here's an ISO. Like, do something, which is what, like, Mark Jackson had him do. And there were mixed results there. I remember, like, a couple of playoff games against the Spurs where he was taking smaller guys in the post and scoring, and he was taking a ton of shots. But I doubt that's how it's really going to work in Dallas. I think they'll try to slowly bring him along and have him run a few pick and rolls and see where that goes. And I think that's where the DeRozan comparison is interesting, right? Because he ran, I don't know exactly what the numbers were, but if you look at shooting guards in the NBA, he ran like a ton of pick and rolls for a shooting guard. And a few years ago, like, that just was not happening. And a lot of people would have said, no, he's not a good enough ball handler. He's not a good enough passer. He's never going to do that. Well, he worked on it and he did. And I couldn't tell you if Barnes will be doing that in 3 years or not.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I don't think he's a very good ball handler right now, but I think you can teach that, right? Like,
yeah.
It's unlikely they'll say, hey, Harrison, never get better than you are right now. I don't see that being Rick Carlisle, Mark Cuban's plan for this whole thing. So
yeah, I don't think they're going to be like, we at the Mavericks, we are about stagnation.
Right.
We don't want you to try to do anything that you've never done. We just want you to be exactly who you are now. Maybe get a little worse. Do not get better.
Right. Exactly. I'm trying to find the line for tonight's game. The
wasn't it crazy last game? Like, it was like right dead on.
It was the U.S. was favored by 48.5 points, and they won by 49 points.
That's how do they do it?
I don't know. It was kind of touch and go. Like, it looked at the end that China may sneak another possession in there, and they just managed to make it 49. So at least, you know, didn't lose by 50.
Yeah,
that's good.
A moral victory.
Yeah, that's a positive. I think these are soccer odds. That's not going to help me.
What are you looking at?
I don't know. I googled China USA point spread, and it took me to soccer.
Huh.
So that seems unlikely to use.
Maybe it's off the board.
Maybe it is off the board.
I think it probably should be. Like, if you're seriously betting on an exhibition game. Like,
oh, you've got
like a
serious problems.
Yeah,
if you're like, betting on a USA basketball friendly exhibition.
Yeah, where like they're sort of trying, but it's kind of too easy.
Right.
Yeah, I saw like an Instagram of like Team USA sitting with Coach K, like going over film, and I was just thinking, like, how serious is this film session really? Like, what are they breaking down?
I found it. Now USA minus 49.5. It's moved up a point since the last game.
Oh, wow.
So, are they going to win by 50 or not?
Yeah, they are.
I think China covers.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought you said you loved your country.
I do, but 50's a lot. And you know what they say about these back-to-back friendly exhibitions leading up to the Rio Olympics? It's tough. The second one's tougher.
The second one's not quite so friendly.
I predicted Yi Jianlin would go for 40 last game. He just missed it at 18.
Yeah, I just barely missed
it. So I'm going to cut back to 30 tonight. I think it goes for 30.
Okay. I mean, I don't – I'm going to go with he gets 17.
17? That is the difference. So you think that China really takes a step back, that they lose by 50 and he drops back to 17 points.
Exactly. That's going to be the difference.
I'm actually going to say that they win by 60 now.
Wow.
I just thought about it and how dumb it seems to think that things would go better for them. It's probably going to go much,
like,
much worse.
They're not, like, resting anybody, are they?
Do you rest people in friendly exhibitions?
I don't know. You never know.
Grievous Vasquez played only, like, one of the four games this past
He's coming
like,
off an
weeks.
Injury.
Yeah. I don't know. Draymond's playing like he's injured. He's been pretty bad in the first
two
games.
Well, this is more about just developing chemistry for him, since he's going to be basically playing on this kind of team in
right.
a few months.
Durant and Clay look good together. They look like
yeah.
they've got some chemistry, so that's good. And apparently
they're making
Clay
jokes
was,
about each other all over the place.
Right, apparently Clay was very, very deferential in terms of, like, he's fine giving up things so Kevin Durant can join the team. That was a big reason why KD, like, trusted that it would work.
Yeah, like, apparently KD's agent, Rich Kleiman, just, like, peppered Clay with question after question in the meeting. Like, why would you want him here?
That would
like,
have been,
gonna
that
have
would be weird. Like, if we were trying to recruit, like, Zach Lowe, and they brought us in, and then his agent was just like, Zach, you're already named Zach. Why would you want Zach Lowe here? And I would be like, what is going on? I'm uncomfortable with these questions.
Apparently Clay handled it in a very chill Clay-like manner.
Of course, he's always chill.
I just wish, like, we've heard so much about this meeting and how pivotal it was and making Durant comfortable about this whole thing and how impressed he was with how everybody seemed like a family and Clay with his, like, stumbling over talking about how he was the one who would get open shots and saying, oh yeah, you'll get open shots too. Like, I just wish there was some sort of recording of this and we could all watch this momentous occasion in free agency history where the Warriors, everybody showed up and convinced KD. And I wonder if it would actually live up to all these descriptions of it after the fact.
Well, this is the Warriors' biggest mistake, is that, I mean, I get they had to because they had to clear space, but they never went back and re-signed Richard Jefferson after they got rid of him. He would have Snapchatted this whole thing.
He really would have. He went to Snapchat headquarters yesterday.
Of course he did.
And he Snapchatted it, and he put Mecca there.
Sure.
I mean, what more do you want from Richard Jefferson?
Yeah. No, he's... Are you surprised he unretired?
Not really.
Well, I guess he never officially retired. He just said he was going to.
He just said he was going to immediately.
Champagne.
Yeah. Did you see that image that's floating around of, like, different screenshots from right after time ran out in the Cavaliers won, where the rest of the team went and, like, ran to the court and were celebrating. He just sat there with his head and his hands on the bench, just soaking it all in. It was actually pretty nice.
That's great.
That was going around on Reddit. But he, you know, like, he started kind of walking it back, like, immediately after he said it. Like, the very next day, he was like, well, maybe. And then when, like, Cavs fans were chanting, one more year at the parade, like, it started seeming like, okay, like, he can make some more money here. He proved he was still effective. He loves being around these guys. And I think that's part of it, right? Like, he's been in so many different situations in the NBA, and he's on a team with, like, Channing Frye, who he's been friends with forever. And I think this Cavs team we saw in the second half of the year, a lot of it was because of Richard Jefferson documenting it. Like, they're, like, legitimately close, and they just won a title. And I think to have a chance to go and defend it and play a real role in it too, like, I get it.
Yeah,
he even got
them to like Kevin Love a little bit.
Yeah, a lot. Little Kev, man.
Right, by making fun of, what was it, like a Banana Republic thing, or
Tommy Bahama.
Tommy Bahama, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Right, the Islander Banana Republic, right?
Yeah, I mean, Richard Jefferson did, like, an autograph signing at a Tommy Bahama store, like, with Little Kev with him.
Sure.
Which is just a printout of the model.
All right, my last question for you before we go. If you're Kyrie Irving back in Oracle tonight, do you try to set up a play where you're hitting a three from the same spot, but you do it with Klay Thompson as close to you as possible this time?
I think absolutely.
Or do you, like, make the same move, start to take the shot, and then just drop the ball and tell Clay to go pick it up, and then you walk back on defense.
I think...
How do you... Because he's been talking trash this whole time.
Yeah. You don't do a normal warm-up routine at all.
You just shoot from that spot?
You just shoot from that spot, and you keep asking Clay to defend you, and then... Or asking Clay to, like, rebound the ball. Or like, just, Clay, I need your help on this one. I just need to work on something.
Or every time you hit a shot from that spot, you just yell, "Where's Steph?"
Yeah.
That's what you do.
I wonder if Steph will be there.
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm not sure where he is right now. Kyrie, I feel like he was on vacation, but I'm not sure.
Kyrie would get in trouble for this, but he should start the game in Under Armour shoes.
Wow.
That's what he should do.
I think there's a 0% chance of that happening.
And then hit a three, and then say, well, at least someone had to hit a shot in these shoes. At what point is the game winner tonight made?
I'm gonna say
13 seconds into the game.
Like, if you lead wire to wire, then would you say it's like the first shot?
Yeah.
Like, that's the game winner?
100%.
I'm not sure the definition of a game winner in a game that is decided by 50 or 60 points.
I think that's what it is.
Okay. Then, yeah, sure.
Okay. Last time, it took them a while. It took them, like, 5 minutes to hit their... to, like, take a real lead.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, China is ready. Man, maybe they don't lose by 50 or 60 points.
I hope KD just comes out gunning. Just like, I'm going to put on a show.
I want DeAndre Jordan.
And then he like jumps on the thing. The
scorer's table?
The scorer's table. And he's just like, this is my house.
After hitting his first shot. That's what I want.
The first shot.
I want DeAndre Jordan to shoot a three tonight.
Oh, wow. This isn't an all-star game. You realize it's a friendly.
It's not that friendly. They beat him by 49 points. It's not that friendly.
You know, if that starts happening in the Olympics, like, the world will just hate Team USA if, like, DeAndre starts taking threes.
Well, no. Only if he starts making them when they're up by, like, 40 points. I think the world will be actually pretty happy with DeAndre Jordan shooting three-pointers. There's one wasted possession for you.
I actually wonder, like, because, you know, like, most NBA players, even guys that, like, never shoot jumpers, like, they if they're unguarded, they can go out there and hit threes.
Right.
But I wonder if DeAndre could actually do that. Like, if you just completely, like, no pressure situation on a regular day, no defense, just him and, like, a rebounder at a gym, if he could make, like, I don't like 10 out of 20 threes. You think he could do it?
10 out of 20? That's a lot.
You think he could make, like, 10 out of 30?
Yeah, I think that's safer.
Okay. Like, I think he might be able to do it.
I've seen, like, Aaron Gray hit, like, six threes in a row in a warm-up, right? Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, I think there is, but I think there is a line. Like, I don't think Dwight Howard could go 10 to 20. And I consider him to be a better shooter.
I miss Aaron Gray.